Mr. Chairman. Before we start the description of our semi-annual update on the Metro Bus Capital Improvement Program, I want to acknowledge the presence in the audience of a number of people who actually do some very hard work here at the authority. The gentleman whose name I'll give you in just a second, ask them to stand up and get the recognition they deserve, are the ones who were completed the 1,000th bus rehabilitation on January 13th. That bus will be actually featured at our 30th anniversary celebration out at Carmen Turner, so you can go out and actually see the high-quality work that they do. I've actually been exposed to the high-quality work that they do on the 90s line here in town, and it is a point of pride. I'd like to ask Walter Krajewski, Antonio Fernandez, Bernard Bauer, Gerald Parker, and their supervisor, Gary Cox, to stand up and ask folks to recognize them. An excellent conversation just before we got started here with a number of these folks, and got some great ideas about how we can make their work a little better, give them some opportunities with the organization. I look forward to working on them. And now I'd ask them, you know, to get back to work. But with that, I'll turn it over to Takis to give the semi-annual update. Thanks, gentlemen.
Mr. Chairman, this is the semi-annual update, the second update, really, we do for you on our comprehensive bus capital improvement program. And I have here the three project managers. Bob Golden, he will talk to you about the procurement of the buses. Beck Park, about the systems integration for the buses, and then Nati will talk to you about all the planning he has underway for some of the priority corridors and so on. I'd like to refresh your memories to tell you that the $830 million program we have here, where the money goes, and so far we have spent almost $190 million. Very quickly to review it with you, for fleet improvements we're going to put $600 million or 73 cents for every dollar involved in this program. The maintenance facilities have 128, and you're going to receive later on a presentation of how we're going to improve the maintenance facilities from Dave Couch and his project manager, Joe Triolo. The onboard system, the $79 million, Beck Park is going to tell you where we are today, and then you're going to hear about the bus stop improvements, which is about $27 million. I'd like to ask Mr. Golden to take us through on the next slide.
Good morning. This graph is just an update of the graph we presented to you September 8th of 2005. It shows that we're still on target with the bus procurement program that we presented to you at that time. The 417 buses are still on the delivery status. 250 CNGs are virtually wrapped up. The 40 of the hybrid electric buses are on property. And next we will be bringing on the diesel buses. As you can see in the out years, these fleet numbers on the bottom factor in the Metro Matters expansion buses and keeps us right in line with the board mandate of a 7.5-year average fleet age. And this is based on the procurement that we have presented earlier. The next slide. Projects completed so far. 250 CNG buses, as I said, are virtually wrapped up. There are only a few stragglers that will be here within a week or two, and that will wrap up the CNG bus procurement on time. We said the buses would be here by the end of March, and we're only a few days off. Next program, I'll defer to my colleague, Mr. Pack.
As far as the automatic vehicle location system is concerned, during the last 6 months, we resolved all the major system issues, and we verified the system functions as designed. And we are compiling a punch list items to fully accept the system. In addition, we are adding schedule and graphical data to the AVL system to realize the full function of the AVL system as we should need. As far as the bus radio system is concerned, we have completed the remediation of all the buses and non-revenue vehicles, and they are tested, and also the maintenance function has been transferred over to operations maintenance. So that project is completed. And as far as the bus systems architecture and standards framework, there has been a planning effort to comply with the Intelligent Transportation System initiatives. And that resulted in recommending bus systems architecture, and a standard framework. And this document is being reviewed and by vehicle engineers at this point, and plan is being developed for incorporating into the future bus buys, the specs for the future bus buys. With that, let me turn over to this.
The next item, our clean fleet program, we're in the process of wrapping that up. That program saw the addition of soot filters on 336 buses. The last buses are being returned to the authority as we speak. In addition, we had a consent decree that was underwritten by Cummins Engine Corporation to put soot filters on 125 additional buses, and they are completed. And we have 59 buses that are 1992 Orions that had complete engine repowers, and they are having a final software upgrade, and that will wrap up our clean fleet program. And our target was March 31st, and we're very close to that goal.
Bus lifts, we completed three bus lifts at 4 Mile Run, Southeastern Bus Garage, and Northern Bus Garage, and they are functional. And as to the bus fare system replacement, all work has been completed, and the contract is in closeout mode at this point.
All right, for the next 100 days, we will see the completion of the delivery of the 50 hybrid electric buses. As you know, we had 39 current design buses and 11 of the new restyle buses, the prototype restyle buses here, and the remaining 10 restyle hybrid electric buses will be here within that 100-day period. The vehicle overhaul program, you had the opportunity to meet the gentlemen that were involved with the overhaul of the 1,000th bus. By the end of June, this fiscal year, we will do 106 buses.
Real-time passenger information system, that's the next bus system. The implementation was on schedule, and full functioning system will be in place by July 1st. And our bus riders will be able to get next bus predictions using their website on their PCs, cell phones, and electronic signs that will be propagated beginning with Pentagon Station and throughout the summer. We are predicting something less than 50 signs at this point. Simplify sign-on. This is a part of a major program for bus systems integration. This is an effort to integrate all the onboard bus systems so they will all work together, and the data quality improvements, and also enhance how the bus operators function on the bus systems right now, because they're currently having to sign on to four different systems. Simplify sign-on mentioned here will be completed by end of June, and this is geared toward us having a common logon between Cubic Failbox system and the Orbital AVL system. So when you sign on to Cubic Failbox system, Orbital AVL system will automatically sign on together.
Okay, by the end of the year, and this will complete our 417 bus acquisition for this fiscal year, these will be the advanced technology diesel buses, which are currently in the manufacturing process. We tried to incorporate as many of the requests by the board of directors as possible in updating the appearance of our buses. These buses will feature a rear window as well as the redesigned front that you see up there. We're anticipating delivery will start in May and be completed by the end of summer. And
the bus network evaluation study is ongoing, expected to be completed in September of this year. This is the successor study to the regional bus study. It was completed about 2 years ago. And this study needs to be completed before we can report the acquisition of the next 135 Metromatic expansion buses. This will be looking at the recommendations that were put forward in the regional bus study and prioritizing the recommendations there for a recommendation about the deployment and the mix of the vehicles that we acquire. The regional bus stop inventory is also ongoing. This is a study that is expected to be completed in December of 2006. We're starting to collect data on, it's 80 plus data elements for each bus stop in the region. We're looking at the district and Prince George's counties right now, everything from ridership to routes to quality of the bus shelter to existence of pedestrian amenities, ADA accessibility, and so on. That will be, as I said, expected to be completed in December 2006.
And in closing, Mr. Chairman, next month, I'm optimistic that we will be able to come before you and make a recommendation of the bus technologies, what it will look like to proceed with a multi-year bus procurement. Also, we're looking forward to complete the contracting to start construction on Carmen Turner for the bus facilities. And we have three, four items with the general manager and the CFO and I. We're going to work to fund three items for the bus program, which are presently unfunded. The automatic passenger counters for $2 million, the fleet watch for $2.5 million, and all the other customer service improvements, the integration of the fleet planner, IVR, and so on, for $5 million. That's how the look ahead stands at this time for the bus program.
What's fleet watch?
Fleet Watch is a system that actually monitors the performance of the vehicle as it operates. It checks out. It's the fueling issue. It monitors how much fuel goes into the vehicles. It monitors the performance of the vehicles and allows the maintenance folks to have a good sense of what's going on.
Is this when it comes into service?
While it's actually operating.
Real time. Next bus. That's actually a trademark. Are you actually using Next Bus?
There are some discussions among communications folks. There was some audio bouncing around whether to call it Our Bus or Next Bus. Next Bus without the space is a trademark. What we decided to do is, because of the ubiquitous nature of the terminology, we decided to use Next Space Bus.
And your attorney's confident that's not a trademark violation.
That's not a trademark.
But the answer is it's not necessarily that company.
No, sir.
Okay, so you haven't determined how you're doing it?
I think we made a decision to go with the Next Space Bus.
Well, I'm not really interested in the name. I'm interested in what you're doing. Are you going outside? Are you doing in-house? Or how are you doing this?
As far as what are you talking about? As far as the name?
How is it that the customer is going to have the ability to know when the Next Bus arrives with real-time passenger information? How's that going to occur?
Adjunct to this project, an additional feature, we are actually going to be putting up a sign at each bus stop, which will print, we actually had decided on design yesterday. It will pretty much say, for Next Space Bus information, call this number and put in this bus stop ID number.
So this is the telephone system that we talked about.
Yes, sir.
And it's using your existing AVL that we've recently implemented and some software. You use that in-house. You've got a contractor. You bought them off the shelf.
The contract for installing the signs will be done through Next Bus. There'll be a modification. As far as the data interface is concerned, yes, the Next Bus will get the data feed from the AVL system as well as scheduling system, which will make the prediction work.
Mr. Tangelini, can you help?
Yes, I was going to try to. We are actually using Next Bus, the company, right?
Yes.
Yes. We are using Next Bus, the company.
We are using
Next Bus, the company. District of Columbia is using Next Bus, the company, on their shelters as well. We, though, have additional functionality that isn't Next Bus, the company, in terms of displays. We have this program we're moving forward on that will allow you to call in to get Next Space Bus information, not Next Bus information.
You just demonstrated the reason why you probably want to come up with a different name. But
okay.
What I don't understand is we have a phone-in system that isn't Next Bus, so there's going to be a sign at the shelter that says, call this number if you want to know when the bus is coming, and you have some phone system that's going to do that.
That's what we're working on.
On my end.
Yes.
But on the bus end, how is the information getting to that system?
Coming through the automatic vehicle locator system.
Okay.
Next Bus, the brand name Next Bus, uses the automatic vehicle locator system, the orbital radio system, integrates that information and displays it on their Next Bus displays.
You mean on their website?
On the website, on the displays in bus shelters.
Yeah, we're going to have displays at bus shelters?
We're going to have up to 50 displays at five major transit centers. That's
all right, so that is the plan I heard last time. So it's basically five stops out of the 5,000 or whatever it is.
And that's WMATA. That information will also be fed to the District of Columbia, which has 800 bus shelters coming online, which will all have those displays.
Wait, really?
Next Bus, the company.
And that's a deal that the district made.
That's the deal the district made, but a deal we're also, and I was at the COG CAOs meeting yesterday, and I asked for participation from Council of Government CAOs to help us from how to work with each of those jurisdictions to try to manage their individual advertisement laws and, frankly, their restrictions so that we could put a shelter deal like that together with the other jurisdictions.
When we did the demonstration on the 38B of Next Bus several years ago, which incidentally Arlington paid for,
right,
one of the reasons Metro decided not to go ahead with that was that the feeling was that the technology, which depended upon essentially cell phone communication, was not well suited to a large system, and that it wouldn't ultimately work well for a fleet of 14-minute buses. Has that conclusion changed, or is this actually a different way of doing things than the way Next Bus has done?
I'm not familiar with that decision, discussion. But cell phone technology is suitable for large fleet of buses. That's been demonstrated in other cases.
That having been said, the information we're using is coming over our radio system. And so really we're working with this partner to integrate the information and simply provide it through website and through shelter displays.
You're saying it's not cell phone based?
It relies on both. For the data coming from the AVR system to the server for the Next Bus is the radio system based issue. Okay? Because if the vehicle location has to be sent on a real time basis. And from the server to the each specific sign, it is a cell phone based. So each one of those electronic signs must have a cell phone card in it.
This is similar to the architecture of what Transport for London has done in something they call iBus, in which the bus communication back to their operations center is via their radio, and then the communication to the individual shelters or to individual users is via cell phones or PDAs. What we're simply trying to do is get, through a variety of different means, information about when that forthcoming bus is coming, although we have to come up with probably a better name than that.
Forthcoming bus might not be.
it's a good Washington.
Nice first try. Far more literary than we used to.
Yeah, right.
What has Metro Rock?
All right. So what actually will be happening this summer is that I'm going to get a phone number.
We're shooting for this summer to have, at least on the demonstration line, a phone number that you can call with on a certain route where you can punch in your station. We'll be able to get at least some web information.
That's correct.
And then we'll begin rolling out the shelters and the displays in certain places. Are we going to have some displays this summer as well?
That's correct.
So let's make sure we get the expectations right here now. This was June. Now we're saying summer, which is wonderfully ambiguous. But what is it exactly that I should expect? Is it a demonstration line or is it a system-wide service?
As for the foundational system, the web services and whatnot, those are pretty much a full functioning system. So you will have a website with all the routes and all the buses displayed by Kimberly. Where it's going to be phased in, and we are hoping for full implementation, but where it's going to be phased in is the electronic signs. Because what takes time is actually running the electrical work.
Yeah, I understand. You're only doing five spots for that anyway, but you're telling me that there'll be a web page that'll show me where the buses are for all the buses in the system. And at what point is this phone number active where on any bus I can call up and see when the bus comes?
Right now, the reason it may seem like we're hedging is we are having conversations with the communications department to see whether we can accelerate the interactive voice response system integration. So we can use a one common number, 637-7000 number, to incorporate the Next Bus information into the same framework. So we are having that discussion right now.
Mr. Langley, what did you just tell me?
What he's telling you is that the reason why we're hedging is because this is part of a bigger telecommunications and communications discussion we're having about having a common single number to call for Metro. We now have a number for essentially,
you know, if you want a light bulb, you have to call that number. If you want the red line, it's that number. Buses, it's that. So as part of a broader strategy of combining all our information towards one number and recognizing that our single largest call is, where's my bus? Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what we'll call it. We realize that we could be overwhelming our communication system if we roll out the one number at the same time we're saying, oh, great, and call us when you want to know where your bus is. So that's really, we want to make sure that it's successful. The big fear is the initial rollout of PIDs, the passenger information displays in the rail line. So by June 30th, you will have a website that's system-wide. By June 30th, we're hoping to have a demonstration line. They'll show you how you can use this number. Where it goes from there, we really have to see how things go in terms of integrating these various
different... Sounds like the answer to my question is you don't know.
I think that's probably what we've been trying to say.
Okay, because what it says on the paper is that this summer customers will have the ability to know when the next bus arrives with real-time passenger information.
And they will.
That's an overstatement.
Well, not by June 30th if you use the web. Frankly, when we engage in this, we don't know of any other major system that has this at all. So this is very innovative. It's very aggressive. There's fraught with some risk. We're letting you know what that risk is, but we don't want to give you a July 15th deadline if we know we can't.
If we're not actually going to deliver this, then let's just say that. I mean, if what you're telling me is that if I happen to carry a laptop around with wireless connection and I pull it out of the bus stop, I might be able to.
Before you leave your home or your office, you could go on the web and see where that bus is, see if it's keeping the schedule.
But when we'd be able to even dial in, it's at this point not certain.
That's system-wide is point not certain. We're shooting for a demonstration line or lines by the end of June.
Okay.
There is a fairly good chance that we can have that done by June 30th. Because once the decision for a single number is made, which I think will be shortly made, okay, we are thinking about actually, probably Leona can speak more about this, but we are thinking about incorporating 800-637-7000 number, because a lot of the customers on the outer fringes, if they call current 202 number, it's a long distance number. So we are trying to see whether we can enhance the customer service by going with the 800 number. So once the decision is made, it's a physical constraint that we have is we have a contract vehicle already set to develop this sign and install them, but actually installing 12,400 signs can take a long time. So it's just a physical constraint of installing this sign.
Board members, other questions? Well, I have another one. The procurement, multi-year bus procurements are currently being evaluated. You mentioned the different lengths of buses. I assume there's some discussion that goes behind that. But I'm interested in what the other characteristics are that we'll be looking in what I expect will be a best value procurement.
Let me just start with the 30,000-foot level. We're making a huge investment in bus, and it's fantastic. 417 buses over 2 years is great. It also, though, has broader implications of when those buses age out. They'll all age out in the same two-year period. What we need to do, recognizing that we have a fleet size of about 1,500, we've got a goal of about 7.5 as our average age, we need to have a consistent buy that we do year after year after year. And we need to move in a direction where we have a consistent roughly 100 buses a year. So the idea is to try to develop a multi-year long-term procurement that then addresses our varying needs for 30, 40, and 60-foot buses. Right now what we do is we essentially start from scratch. We spend a year and a half running around and looking at this and tweaking that and adding this and taking that off. And then, while we're waiting for that process to happen, we need to add more buses to it and more buses to it. We have technology discussions. The idea is to try to get a consistent program that rehabs and refreshes those buses on a long-term basis so that we can kind of make the basic operations of the system basic and talk about the more meaningful things, more deeply. So that's, and then making sure we reflect the fact that there are different types and sizes of buses we need
30, 40, and 60 foot, basically being the three sizes that we use.
Well, okay. I'm interested, though, in how we can ensure that we don't buy any more buses like the buses we've generally bought, because, you know, we're like cell phones, you know, Europe's always a generation ahead of us.
Right.
You know, if we're going to be talking about long-term procurement, we're one of the largest bus agencies in North America. By the time we're done with this, we probably move up a few pegs on the bus side. And we ought to be having buses that are, you know, the best in North America, frankly. Right now, the only really good buses from the standpoint of passengers in the region are the ones you got UN running on the DC circulator, or maybe the Van Hall. And we use federal money, so we presumably can't buy those. But we have to figure out a way that we can get the manufacturers here to build us something that's as good as what they, you know, routinely get in Europe. Even the manufacturers that sell in Europe won't sell us the bus here that they sell in Europe. We ought to be able to do something about that in an agency as large as this.
Although I think you've already seen some movement. I think even the 28 buses that we brought in from Belgium to run on the D.C. streets have had an effect on the industry. Already I've met with representatives from the industry who are changing the way the windows are installed in the bus to get that flush look. You heard that the 117 newest buses will have a back window.
Yeah.
Before that wasn't even an option on
yeah.
the table. So I think already we're beginning to have that effect. I'm also excited about the prospect of looking like what they've done out in the West Coast, where a number of bus properties have got together and said, gee, each buy 50 buses a year. What if we all get together and we buy 200 buses a year? That's enough to keep a single plant going a year. You suddenly become not only a good customer, but the best customer of that manufacturer.
Well, that was the next part I was going for, which is first, can we talk about how we might combine with some of the, we have a lot of bus agencies in this region. All together, you'd probably be one of the top two or three, you know, bus systems in the country. You know, can we see about whether we can be of assistance there so that they can, you know, get onto this contract?
We do have assignability provisions in our contract as well as a COG agreement. Montgomery County is buying buses off of our procurement.
Currently?
Yes.
No.
The CNG buses that they bought this year were off of our contract, as well as some other properties, actually other properties around the country. So when we put our specifications together, we always do have that option in there to help out other transit properties.
But I think that could be part of our regional bus conference discussion.
Yeah.
You know, that would be an agenda item or a breakout group, have the various different procurement people from the various different areas. And to try to forecast our needs going forward and put it together, I think we could have a regional bus buy that maybe we could even attract in a partner, say, Maryland MTA, and expand that bus buy even more substantially.
Well, I'd like to take that a little farther, and, you know, I'd like to see if we can get a bus spec that's informed by the other agencies, but also by more people in the riding public.
Right.
You know, not only by operational considerations, which is pretty much how bus has been governed in this country for, you know, the last couple of generations. You know, if a bus is good, it's because it's good for the people who have to, you know, maintain them and all. And obviously that stuff's important. But, you know, maybe we could bring some customers in. Maybe the Riders Advisory Council could have some input into this.
Great idea.
And we could come up with what is an overall spec. And then maybe we see if we get other folks to get on board with it. As you say, if some other agencies were to, you know, to join up, that might look like some market power, and maybe somebody would say, you know, we could keep the plant going for a while, as you said, and maybe we get ourselves a better generation of buses.
One of the things I heard from the mechanics out at Bladensburg when I visited there a couple Fridays ago was that they would like to participate more in picking the bus. I also heard that from the bus drivers.
That's a good idea, too.
Certainly from the Riders Advisory Council. The other thing I heard was that by not buying a kind of consistent type of bus, by going through these big slugs, what happens is we have a bus fleet that's very, very varied. And the only profitable airline right now is Southwest Airlines. Why? One of the reasons why is because they fly 737s and only 737s. And everyone knows how to get on and off them, how to operate them, and how to fix them. We don't fly 737s. We fly the full Airbus range, the full Boeing range. We still got some McDonnell Douglases out there. So one of the reasons why we may want to go in a forward-looking way with a consistent long-term arrangement is that we would then have economies of scale, save on parts, save on maintenance, and
maybe
save on operations.
Although if you buy 100 buses a year,
after 5 or 6 years, you're not, you don't have one fleet of bus either. You have five or six fleets. So I don't know if that ever fully works. But at any rate, these are good things, subjects for the bus conference. When are we thinking about having that?
The original proposal was November. I asked to shoot more for something like August.
August?
September?
The sooner I like, but July. August is a difficult month to do things.
Well, it's difficult month, but it's easy to schedule.
Empty rooms, certainly. Board members have questions.
On the technology side of the smart trip card on the bus system, is that intended to overtake the paper transfer system in the region? And what's the progress or process toward that?
The process is the next Fare 4 that the board approved. The progress is measured incrementally. We're at a 26-month overall program for Next Fare 4, and I'll be meeting with Cubic in the next week or two to actually work with Takis's group on the work plan of when that's delivered. Issues like auto load, so you can tie your smart trip to your Visa card or MasterCard or credit card, so that it's automatically loaded, you don't have to physically load it. And then the regional implementation of the fare boxes and the regional clearinghouse allows us then to move towards the elimination of the paper transfers, which cost us a huge amount of money to maintain and to track, and is part of the reason why our average bus fare, at the average fare for a rider on the bus is actually 80 cents versus $1.25, which is our, the price.
Yeah, as has been widely reported, I don't often take the bus. However, on Friday, on Friday with the cherry blossoms and such in town, and I brought some people down to see the cherry blossoms, I thought perfect day to do the bus deal because I didn't want to deal with my car even at the metro lot in terms of trying to find a parking space. So, but what I found was, to my shock, after paying for the initial ride, I could effectively ride the bus free all day. That the transfer system is just not very good. Now, albeit...
Depends on the perspective, I guess.
The original distribution was from a ride-on driver out in the county, but that... I had a piece of paper that I looked at both sides, and I just thought, well, I don't know how this restricts me in any way. I know there's supposed to be a two-hour window or something, but indeed, the way it was set up with the timing on it, the way it was torn or whatever, I could ride till 7 o'clock for free all over town.
And I was just asking Mr. Rico about these very issues earlier in the week. About 15% of our bus riders come off of other regional bus lines. And I don't know what the equivalent return is for a ride on. That's something that we should ask about. I imagine an awful lot of Metro rail people are walking on the ride on with transfer. I think there's a lot of possibilities and a lot of interest in everyone getting, eliminating those paper transfers and moving towards the smart trip. It's harder to have that sub economy of people. I know at many stations that I come out of and go into, there are people asking, do you have a transfer? And that's money directly out of the pockets of the authority. We should also then be sensitive that if not handled appropriately or not handled carefully, it could be perceived as a fare hike on the part of bus riders.
Do I actually have to pay for the ride they're supposed to be paying for?
Well, how often or how we control how many different transfers they get to make, or how tight a control we have on the time on that transfer when you go to the smart trip. Right. I mean, if you look, our average fare on the bus is currently 79 cents.
Okay, thank you.
And while, there's some things, improvements obviously can be made here, a major problem we do not have is our passengers not paying enough for the service here. So.
I would like to point out, eliminating the fare, the paper transfer at some point, and moving more of our bus passengers to Smart Trip would reduce the transaction time substantially at the fare box, reduce dwell time, improve headways, save fuel, save maintenance. I mean, it has a huge potential impact. With only, I think, between 10% and 15% of our current bus riders actually using the Smart Trip card, we have a huge way to go to incentivize behavior that frankly saves us money and improves the experience. So I've actually been talking with Jack and others about how do we create an incentive to get Smart Trips in the hands of bus riders.
I believe it was the last meeting before that I raised that and asked what, you know, we're going to have a strategy for getting people, you know, who ride the bus to use Smart Trip, because that wasn't a problem with the rail system. So we're not doing something right with regard to bus.
One of the strategies is to drive down the entry cost of getting the Smart Trip from $5 to something substantially less than that. And having the open architecture fare reader, so again, the next fare 4, which would allow us to have multiple chips, not just the Monopoly chip, not just the cubic chip, your favorite chip, would allow us to then drive down the price, the going market price is as low as 35 cents. Which gets competitive, certainly, with paper transfers and other things.
What's the current cost to us of the card?
It's about $3.75. It's come down from, it was $5. It's been floating down.
Actually,
still,
before you got here, it was $10 when we first started. And the original deal was we would pay half and the customer would pay half, and that's how we got to $5. Then it dropped to $5, and we just kept charging. Some of us thought, maybe we didn't need to, but there was no discussion, so we kept charging $5 because people were paying it anyway.
Right.
At least rail riders were paying it. So now it's even less than $5, and we're still charging people more. And, I think if we can get it less expensive, that might help. But one way or another, it makes no sense for us. It's slowing down buses, it's, you know, lengthening the ride, and all the other things you said. We need to get more folks using it. And since it's so convenient to do, it's such an advantage when you have it. People aren't. We're doing something wrong. So when you will be coming back to us with that strategy or plan?
Well, I've asked folks to prepare a fare collection strategy, not a Smart Trip strategy. Mm-hmm. I think part of our problem is we've had a Smart Trip strategy, which assumes a cubic strategy. And I've heard the concerns of the board. I've asked them to come back with a fare strategy in June or July. And then I would like to work with members of the board and certainly Riders Advisory Council. Again, hopefully by July this year, we could come and talk to you about some of the things that we've seen in the market, some of the things that other transit properties are doing, and some of the directions we'd like to head.
July was the answer?
Yes, sir.
Good. Look forward to it. Anything else?
Mr. Chairman, can we move the agenda?
That means you don't have any questions on it?
I don't have any questions.
Okay. We can move to the next item if nobody has any further questions on this matter.
Mr. Chairman, do you like to do item B, or you like to move back to the action item?
Finish the bus stop.
Okay. Couch and Mr. Triolo. Dave Couch and Joe Triolo will take you through some of the bus facility improvement program. Just as an entree, this is a follow-up to the APTA peer review. You remember the APTA peer review that made certain recommendations. And then you directed the former general manager to go to every bus garage and talk to the employees and ask the employees what do they need for better facilities for how this program came together. For that, Dave and Joy will take you through today to show you how that bus facilities improvement program looks like from the scope of work point of view. Dave?
Good morning. The bus facilities improvement program, there's two integral parts to it. One is the bus rehab items that were developed as a result of the APTA bus peer review, and the second is the build-out of the Carmen Turner facility for the CNG bus paint and body shop. And elements of both of these projects are critical to the implementation of the recommended bus painting program that's also in this presentation. The bus facilities rehab items, they were developed as a result of the APTA peer review recommendations made in April 2005. Subsequent to that, those recommendations, a list was developed by the staff here, estimated at $29 million, and this was presented to the committee in September 2005. And at that time, the committee recommended, as Tak has said, that the bus employees be given the opportunity to provide their, review the list and provide their input if any additional items were needed. This was done in October, November of 2005, and as a result of that, we added items to the list, and it was increased, the estimated cost was increased to $34 million. Now, the items have been divided into three categories. Category A is the employee work environment. Examples you can see up there that are on the screen include renovations of the bathrooms and locker rooms, HVA system replacement, interior lighting upgrades, painting of exterior service, and remodeling of offices. The estimated cost for that is $16 million. Next slide. Category B is the work equipment, and that's mainly to replace aged and worn shop equipment and also to install some new equipment. That includes, you can see the picture of the air compressor up there. We'd also be replacing brake testers, pressure washers, steam cleaners, wheel alignment indicators, and part of the work equipment includes two paint booths at Bladensburg and the installation of portable paint booths at the nine other facilities as part of the bus painting program. Category C is the structural rehabilitation, which would be structural upgrade where needed. The estimated cost of that is $10 million, and most of that is taken up with the parking deck, the employee parking deck at Northern to replace that and fix that, the great majority of that $10 million. Other things are like replacement of overhead doors, installation of windows or replacement of windows. Next slide, please. The Carmen Turner facility, which was the second part of this this program, estimated additional funding needed is $12 million. I think in December 2003, the board approved $10 million for the funding of this contract, and it was advertised in August of 2005. Bids were received later in September that year. The bids were significantly higher than the funding amount, $23 to $28 million, and some of that cost increase is mainly due to the inclusion of an expensive roof replacement in the contract and a doubling of the cost of the paint booth. There were five paint booths in this contract. And also, at the time it was in September, Hurricane Katrina just happened, and there was an increase in overall increase in construction costs.
This is what we heard last fall, right?
Pardon?
It's different than what we heard last fall?
No. This is basically what we're doing, Mr. Chairman, is an update on what you heard last fall. We've gone through, visited the facilities, gotten the employee input. It's incorporated the things that were in AFTA. It incorporates the bottom item on this page is the painting. We wanted to provide you with an update, and really the last slide just says that we're going to be going through, the CFO is going through right now looking at funding scenarios, and we'll be coming back to you this fall. What we're looking for now is just to brief you and update you on the progress that we've made, that we've got a program that's ready to go, and once the funding is in place, we'll implement the
policy. Okay, on page four specifically, what on there is different than or new from the last time we had this?
The item for Carmen Turner is exactly the same as it was. This kind of gives a little better explanation on the painting program. It talks about the outsourcing of some of the painting to reach the AFTA recommendation to paint the buses every 3 to 4 years in lieu of the every 7 year cycle, which is what they get now. When they go through the midlife rehab. So there's a little more
investment. That's an after
recommendation. That's correct.
But the choice between in-house and out-house or a mix like this, the outsourcing for what it is as opposed to the use, which I assume we're going to do a certain amount of them in-house.
Mm-hmm. The part of it is the amount of capacity that is there to go ahead and do the painting. With what we've got for the facility that would replace the booths, at Bladensburg and to put the two booths in at Carmen Turner. It takes care of the midlife rehab. It takes care of the normal accident and repainting of buses. By putting small spray booths into each one of the facilities, it allows them to do touch-ups of dings and dents, but there isn't sufficient painting capacity behind it to go ahead and do painting of buses every 3 to 4 years. That's why this part of it includes the outsourcing for that.
That's the part I'm really saying. I mean, if somebody asked, you know, would it make more sense to do it all in-house, or would it make more sense to outsource all of it? You know, how is it that it's not better to do one or the other of those things?
The way that it's looking at is that the outsourced part is only to do a repainting of the bus. It's not to do the major body work for any kind of a heavy accident. The other piece is when we're doing the midlife rehab, the part that we started the meeting with the 1,000th bus that has just been done, basically the buses are all stripped down to the chassis. Everything is taken off of them. If you've had the opportunity to go to Bladensburg and see that, there's really nothing left except the frame. The windows are out, all the mechanical, the electrical is out. So you don't have the potential to be able to drive that bus to a paint facility and just get the outside of it painted. It's much more efficient to have that kind of a detailed body and painting program done in-house.
Okay, so when you're doing complete overhaul, it makes sense to do your painting based
Correct.
On yourself.
Correct.
When you're just doing that periodic repainting that's intended to protect the investment, it makes more sense to outsource.
Correct.
We can package a number of buses together and then, you know, sell the painting to someone who has already installed the capacity and is looking for
some price doing it that way.
Exactly right. And then we can focus our recruitment efforts on the mechanics rather than the painters and body people, because we have to focus our efforts to get those people that we need the most. It's those mechanics that we need the most, rather than the painting and body people, which, you know, we need. But
remind me how much we're spending on buses.
Buses themselves is $600 million?
Yeah, okay. To put in perspective, this investment.
Oh, the overall investment.
Right. Ultimately, it doesn't look quite so large.
Well, and that's the point. I mean, we making sure that we don't just do a good job of buying the new stuff, but taking care of what we have and keeping it looking reasonably new. And that's why we're going through the entire capital budget scrub. Going back to all projects historically, we're going through August, and we think we can come back to the board this fall with ways to address these issues, particularly now in the year of the bus.
Thank you, Mr. Tangerlini. Committee members have questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Deegan.
The $12 million, is that on top of the $10 million we already have for Carmen Turner?
Yes.
So now we're at $22 million.
That's correct.
Which is the $6 million less than the 28 that we were talking about in September.
We had two bids that came in. The lower bid was 22, the higher bid was 28. We've looked at the scope that's in there. Originally, there were 5 paint booths that were included in that $28 million figure. This takes us back to 2 paint booths. That, with some other changes that we made, we believe we can get in the $22 million price range.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Then we'll conclude this. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question, if I may impose on the agenda just for one moment, because I was quite concerned about reports that occurred yesterday in the Examiner newspaper regarding Mr. Tangerlini's point of view on advertising efforts. And I just wanted to give him the opportunity, if it wouldn't be too inappropriate, to just briefly clarify those remarks.
Yep.
For those of you who haven't
seen
it.
I didn't see it, so could you give us
some background? Well, I thought he could include that in this, because I assume you saw the Examiner.
I did, and I was actually
somewhat concerned.
I was surprised by the banner headline. And
maybe you
and
could
know that the headline, Metro Chief is concerned about monopoly. No, I'm making it much longer than a headline, but something about Metro Chief and monopolies, advertising monopolies. Metro creates advertising monopolies. That was the headline. If you read the article was more consistent with with a more nuanced issue or concern I expressed to the reporter when we were talking about advertising, and it came down to the video terminals. The breakout under the picture said that I would oppose the installation of video terminals. That's simply not the fact.
the case. We have 120 days to evaluate the proposals we've gotten in from the video display people. They came back after we said, okay, we're not talking about a 2-year base and 8 1-year options. They came back and said, well, we'd like a 20-year base. Well, a 20-year base seemed much too long, and that was my concern. And then as I looked at, well, before we make this installation, before we go into putting the video terminals in with a 20-year monopoly provider, because that's what it would be, I want to make sure that we've thought this through in terms of our broader communication system strategy. As we look to open our communications system, I think there's a lot of concern that we granted, in essence, an install monopoly to Verizon. And so we want to make sure that the communication system is open to other providers. While we're opening that communication system, that directly has a link, potentially, to the information system that we have on the trains and on the platforms. We have an in-house, kind of our own monopoly, on the passenger information display system. It's made it very hard to update that system or get additional information out there. So I think it's an excellent opportunity to use that next 120 days to ask the broader strategic question, where are we going with all this information? Where do we want to head? And before we make a decision, 20-year or 15 or 10 or even a 2-year decision, making it along the lines of some broad notion of where this organization wants to go in terms of information and advertisement or communication with our customers.
I just want, if I may, Mr. Chairman, just very briefly, because this, I know this doesn't quite squarely fit, but it was such an important article and such a prominent article that, you know, I'm not so much concerned about how you might appear to some people to be at odds with the board policy. I'm not so much concerned about that as I am about the substance of the point of view. And, you know, this is one member of this board. I'm anxious to hear, you know, what your specific issues are, but this board spent an awful lot of time, you know, as you know, I think you're a member of the board for a good part of that discussion about these issues, and they are the subject of some public controversy, so I'm just, you know, at the appropriate forum, which I guess is the operations committee, is to have, you know, if you have views on this, that I'm very anxious to hear them, but I was somewhat taken aback, and I kind of figured that something got lost in translation.
Yeah, again, if you read the headline and the caption, it was very different than the article. And obviously in the space constraint, the broader notion I'm discussing is bigger than that, too. And so there's nothing antithetical to what I think the board has already said. The board has expressed concerns about only having one cell phone carrier. And the board, I think, has previously expressed concerns about installed monopolies in the system and making sure we have an open architecture, as well as a broader strategy. And so I think I'm trying to reflect the broader policy concerns of the board. I obviously concerned about your concern.
Scott. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the general manager using his brain.
I appreciate that, Mr.
The interesting thing is the parallel used. We were cutting edge when we brought cell phones in because of the nature of the contract. We went from cutting edge to the last nest of the dodo bird. So I'd like us to be taking the time, you know, if we're into a long-term contract, what's the upside for us? How can we change it? So we don't end up with dated boxes hanging for forever.
But that is the dilemma, and as long as this crystal ball's around here, you know, aren't better than elsewhere. There's always going to be a trade-off between, number one, being at the leading edge, being at the bleeding edge, and whether you make something that financially is a, you know, a good deal at the time, and whether you regret it later, because, you know, a long-term contract for anything is going to get us a bigger commitment from somebody on the outside, and it can look like a really good deal, and if you don't make it, you can be criticized for not taking a really good deal. And 5 years, 10 years down the road, it can be, gee, how do they make that? The cell phone deal that, you know, Verizon did, I found out before I was a board member because one of the people involved in it was bragging about it. Because at the time, it looked like a really smart thing.
Right.
People, guess what, didn't want to put millions more dollars into Metro.
Right.
And they found out on top of all the things everybody thinks about, they needed all kinds of money for a radio system.
Right.
And they were told, you know, we haven't got that money. Find another way to raise it. And a group of the folks who work in emergency communications got together and they found a way to make a deal with, at the time, the phone company, which now calls itself Verizon,
Remember when there was a phone company? Most of us are old enough to remember the phone company. Our kids don't, but there was a phone company. And they made a deal that basically said they'll do the emergency communication system that we needed, which was the point of the thing, and all they wanted was to be able to, you know, be able to run their cell phones in the, you know, which not that many people had still at that point. So it seemed like a no-lose. I noticed in a recent report it referred to how much money was being paid, and it's not very much and all that, and it sort of loses the fact that it was a major capital investment this agency averted by making that deal. You know, right now, ever since then, I've not been happy that, you know, only have one service that I can use in the tunnel. But it made a perfect rational sense at the time, and they would have been criticized for not doing it. And standing here right now looking forward, it's hard to know whether it's the smartest deal in the world to make a 20-year deal that would have bring all kinds of money into the system, or whether 8 years from now you're going to say, ooh, how did we get stuck with that one?
And I guess that was what motivated me to say, let's step back, because when we got the 20-year numbers, and I really can't speak to them, they really didn't say, ooh, that's an awful lot of money.
Right.
It wasn't so overwhelming. If it was very impressive, it would have been an easy answer. It was not very impressive, and so it was a less easy. It actually generated more questions. It didn't really move all that much between 2 and 20, except 18 years sounds like an awful lot, long time to me.
And I think you're taking the right approach. I just, you know, want to caution us again. You know, leading edge, bleeding edge. When they did PIDs, which also was before I was on this board, they were out in front trying to do something that nobody in North America had done. And, you know, it wound up making some choices that, you know, maybe a few years later would have been a little bit better. But it's easy to say that in retrospect. On the other hand, with Smart Trip Card, we got it exactly right. My father used to say, if hindsight were foresight, we'd all be geniuses. Any geniuses around here? Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. We have an action item.
One action item, the approval of the minutes.
Well, okay. Yes, we do have the minutes as an action item. The minutes have been distributed for the March 2nd meeting. I do have one comment on them, actually. On page... Yes, page 3, the discussion of the constrained long-range plan, and I don't really know what to say by way of amendment, but it seems to me that the discussion is not fully captured. It notes that I asked about, in the first full paragraph, I guess, after the bullet, it notes that I inquired as if whether the staff was assuming that there'd be a $415 million increase in local funding by extending the Orange Line and all that. And Mr. Thomas responded, yes. And then later, it has my comment that the project cannot be done without the additional funding. Mr. Zimmerman and Mrs. Mack requested that staff send a formal letter, transmit a letter to local jurisdictions, policymakers, and be explicit about funding requirements contemplated by the CLRP. Well, there's a couple of problems here. One is, me and Mrs. Mack don't constitute a request from the committee. We spoke about it. The committee consented. So it's direction from the committee. And the minutes shouldn't make it sound like individual board members can make things happen. If the committee doesn't agree, it doesn't matter. That's what I want. Secondly, the overall discussion here was about what line goes into CLRP and whether you can assume a $415 million increase in local funding because you don't actually have that money identified elsewhere. And the point we were making was you can't because the locals aren't going to pick all that up. And I believe that the subsequent action by the board and the letter was pursuant to that. I don't think the minutes here capture that. And I don't know what record you have of the discussion, but I don't think it represents what, in fact, was a committee conclusion to which I don't remember there being any dissent, that the submission to the CLRP had to be adjusted to reflect that funding reality. I would like that brought back for a rewrite. And so if the
committee we submit that as
I would like to have the minutes for that meeting brought carried over this time and brought back at the next meeting. And while we're at changing it, it says somewhere in here that somebody, in one case me, motioned. Make a motion is to move, not to motion. Maybe we can get that too. So So with that, we'll move on to our one action item, which is Vienna. Mr. Coffey.
Since this represents the culmination of 5 years of effort on the part of Fairfax County to get 20 years behind Arlington County, I'd be happy to move the item.
I'll be happy to second it. And I take it you'd be willing to forego the presentation question.
Yes, sir.
Other board members wish to see the presentation, or if they've already read it, as some of us have, or if they have any questions on it. I have just one question. We're building a new garage, which is going to replace the what are surface lots now on which there'll be development.
Yes.
What is the potential in the future for the air rights over the new structure that's going to be built?
No accommodation at this time in the design. It's one of our conventional, likely precast concrete structures that does not include any foundation design and construction for future air rights.
Okay. Well, let me just say that, you know, having just had the discussion about, you know, foreseeing the future, there are some things I think can be foreseen. And I foresee that at some point in the future, we've got a garage there in a place that, because of Fairfax County's very forward-looking decisions that they've made recently, and some difficulty that I'm well aware of, and this board is aware of, having held a hearing out there, I believe people are going to say, boy, this was a smart thing Fairfax did back in 2005, 2006, and this is really valuable real estate. And, gee, why can't we build something in the space over a garage that's a short distance from a metro station? And it would be unfortunate if that possibility weren't there because we didn't anticipate that somebody might want to build something over at some point and has money to do so. That's my comment. Mr. Coffey?
I was just going to say we'd be happy to take a look at the challenge. Of course, we have some height limit caps that are put on there to try to nudge this through the community, and there's also a different building class we have to get into to really redo it. But that height, it's we give a parking. It's a convoluted thing, but we have to deal with it.
Then I just think it would be a good idea that you might want to do that. Right now, I'm happy to say that the Washington Capitals are building a headquarters and two full hockey rinks on top of a garage we have. That may have been dumb luck, but to some degree it was because of the fact that people, when they built that garage, arranged it so they could add more floors to it. And, you know, we're getting the benefit of that. So to the extent that that's something that can be done without extraordinary cost, I think it might be worth looking at. Any further questions, discussion, or thoughts? If not, the question is on the motion, Mr. Kaufman, to approve the staff recommendation to the board. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. I believe that concludes our work for this morning. All right. This committee is done. The Policy Legislative Administration Committee will meet immediately.
Immediately. Yes.
We're adjourned, but don't go away.
That's right. Stay right there.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, fine.
On this occasion.
Yeah.